Welcome back to Radio Rehab. It's always good to be here on Saturdays to meet people that are trying to impact the community in their own way. And today we have a guest that I've known since she started in the field. So I know that you're going to be very excited to hear what Jamie has to tell us. This is Jamie Vogas that I'm introducing you to today. She is a probation officer here in Vandenberg County, but has been working in the criminal justice field since the late 80s, early 90s, when right out of school. So she knows every neighborhood, every age group, every gender, every drug, every sex offense. I mean, she's pretty comprehensive in her criminal justice experience. So I'm anxious for you all to meet her and hear about her and the wonderful things she does for our community to keep us safe, but also to help people get better and to work with folks in a therapeutic incarceration kind of way, where you don't let people off the hook, but while they're on the hook, you try to get them the right help. So she's a real advocate of that, but also an advocate of making sure people are accountable, which is what we in recovery and that are in 12-step programs are all about, accountability. So I'm anxious for you to meet Jamie. Her twin sister Tina's here too, but she probably won't say anything unless she wants to keep Jamie honest. So I want to introduce you to Jamie and let Jamie tell us a little about herself, and then we'll start the interview. Jamie, thanks. You were so ready and willing to come, and I really appreciate that.
Well, thanks for having me. Yes. This is the first time I've ever done this, so I've
never done a radio show.
Never done a radio show, so.
Well, it's pretty easy. Goes fast, too.
Does it go fast?
Goes fast. So you're from Tell City?
I am from Tell City, a small little town, so coming to Evansville was a big change for me. When I first came here to Evansville, I couldn't even find Green River Road. I was that backwards.
Oh, wow.
But it was under construction. I think the Lloyd Expressway was actually just being
construction.
It was division.
Yeah.
And so I got lost trying to find Green River Road.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, this was a big town to me, so a big change. And I came here to college, and I ended up staying. So I've been in Evansville since 1985, so I've came from a large Catholic family. I have five brothers, one sister, my twin sister. I have twin little brothers, too. Hey, guys.
Oh, my.
They're not little anymore. They're 30-something.
Are they younger?
Yes. We were in sophomores when they were born. So,
oh, my.
So there's seven
generations.
Total.
Wow.
A couple generations. And so my mom and dad are still with us. My dad worked as a carpenter. My mom stayed home with all of us. So we grew up, you know, working hard and learning how to take care of ourselves and different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came in here trying to find myself, what I wanted to do, I had an interest in law enforcement, or I thought I maybe even wanted to be a lawyer. Tried to get into law school, didn't make it.
You'd be a good one.
Well, but I think one day I took a probation parole class or something, and it was done by Bart O'Connor, who has since passed away.
Yes.
But he taught the class, and it got me, it got my mind thinking, hey, this is something I think I could do. So I started gearing my
education
around that.
Hmm.
And then when I graduated, I started working, contracting with juvenile court through a counseling agency called Youth Service Bureau. And we supervised the juvenile offenders that were on house arrest. And we didn't have monitors back then, so my job was I had to go to the schools, the houses, everything to track these offenders down and make sure that they were where they were supposed to be. And so I did that for a little bit and got hired on with Community Corrections as a correction officer. The old safe house,
wow.
Yes. And I worked as a correction officer for 2 years. Trying to, the whole time, get into probation, but it was very difficult to get in. Still is difficult to get in. But I weaseled my way, you know, through as close as I could to get in. Mm-hmm. Then my shot came in 92. They opened a position as a field officer. They wanted to do we had two guys doing the field work, but they wanted to do a man-woman team. because we would go around the community, and our job was to do all the home visits and do the drug testing at home, breathalyzers at home. So there was a need to have a man and woman to do that. So I did that for a couple years, and then...
So you went into people's homes.
We were in the homes, yes.
No fear?
No fear, really. There's only a couple times that we have any
incidents
or anything, but for the most part, it was pretty, I'm not sure, laid back, but we didn't have any problems.
Not a lot of resistance.
They knew what we were there for. They were under programs and supervision, and they knew that was a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't always go well for them when we showed up.
And drug screened them.
Right.
So was it random?
Random. You know, we would have, sometimes we would have people that would go missing,
right.
wouldn't be showing up, so we would go find them. Or we knew someone was having real issues with staying clean, so we would hit them up at home, we would hit them up wherever we could. So we would chase these guys around, and it was, you know, it was...
That's a big job.
It was very, very challenging instead of trying to find these people, because these people knew we were looking for them. So.
Yeah.
So we did that, and then that was all held under a grant. So the grant money kind of went away, so we had to stop doing the field work for a little while, and I just did case management with Alcohol and Drug Program. It was called AISP, DISP back then.
Yeah.
And then I got finally hired on.
That was before meth. That was kind of the cocaine, crack, alcohol.
We had a lot of cocaine.
Marijuana,
a lot of marijuana, cocaine stuff at that time.
Yeah.
And then in 98, I finally got hired on at the probation department downtown as a full-fledged probation officer at that point, which was my dream. That's what I always wanted.
No kidding.
Uh-huh.
You just like that?
I love it. I love it. I have... I don't think I could see myself doing anything else. And I've been there, you know, since. And I will retire there.
Yeah.
Or unless they kick me out. So I don't.
That's not going to happen. You are one of those probation officers that has a passion for what you do.
I do. I do.
You believe in it.
I do. A lot of my coworkers are the same way.
Right.
I mean, there's
it's a new
not,
generation of well, they,
yeah.
They, I don't know.
We have a really good core group.
Yes.
I really do, of all the probation departments, and everybody. You know, a lot of us have different specialties. We do one probation officer. You know, takes care of all the domestic violence. We have one probation officer that takes care of, you know, handling a lot of the veterans and things with through veteran court, or if they're with the drug program. One of our probation officers handles all the people that transfer in and out of state, you know. So everybody has their little hats to wear, and we have one probation officer that does all the pre-sentence reports for the court, and that's all he does. Yeah, but it's a need.
Yeah,
it is a need.
Definitely.
So everybody that I work with, I mean, just
loves it.
Loves it. Yeah. Has a passion for it.
Believes in it. That's
believes
true.
In it. I believe they do. When we're together, you know, staff meetings, things like that. You know, everybody's doing their best to do a good job because they care about what they're doing. So.
So you just landed yourself in a gold mine in the late 90s. That was what you were working toward, it sounds like. So.
Yeah, it was. And the only way that I got a position, because back then, the only way you could get into probation department is if someone retired or passed away or anything.
Right. People stayed forever.
People stay.
Yeah.
And they actually appropriated an extra position for probation at that time because, you know, our case numbers have been just exploding.
Yes.
And, so I was lucky and was able to get in at that point. So, and, you know, numbers, like I said, are still rising. You know, I tell a lot of people, I go up to Branchville sometimes and talk to the guys up in the therapeutic communities. And I tell them, well, the amount of people that are in prison, multiply that about 3 or 4. And that's the amount of people around the state that are on probation. So we have a lot of people that we are responsible for. Mm-hmm. Our numbers here in Vandenberg County, we supervise anywhere from 150 to 200 people. And we're expected to be able to know where everybody's at and do everything. And it makes it very challenging. So,
especially if you have high-risk offenders.
Especially,
the addictions.
Oh, yeah. And huge numbers of people coming through for meth-related, drug-related, alcohol-related cases. Probably 80% of all the arrests as they come into court, whether it's burglary, theft, robbery, sex crimes, anything, or drug, alcohol, substance abuse related. Oh, yeah.
So that's 8 out of 10 people you see. You can
probably
well be sure has an addictive disorder or just abusing it.
Yes, absolutely. Both. You know, it is surprising when we first meet somebody and we do their intake and we get their history. When I come across somebody that doesn't have any drug or alcohol issues, I ask them two or three times, are you sure you've never used ever? Because it is rare that we get anybody that doesn't have that. So,
wow. So you're in a place where you always wanted to be.
Yes.
It probably doesn't even feel like you're going to work because you love it.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I go in, I stay late. I mean, whatever we need to do. So everybody does. Takes the
You all are quite a team.
I think we are.
Yeah.
I think we are.
I always get that sense with you and your crew that there's a real team spirit, a real collaborative spirit.
Well, we spend a lot of time together, and we all, for the most part, get along with each other. So
that's great. They like each other.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, so. And respect each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So after 98, then... You said laws changed, especially around sex offenses.
One of the specialties that I supervise is sex offenders. Around 2000, a lot of the sex offender registry laws started changing with who has to register and how often they have to register. And so we decided as a probation department that we needed to have somebody keep on top of all that because there were so many things happening so fast. Mm-hmm. So I was either volunteered, if you want to say, or selected to be the officer handling the sex offenders specifically.
What a change for you at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it was because of these guys are, you know, and women, not very many, but are high risk. You know, when you want to keep on top of them. They're the high profile cases a lot of times. Mm-hmm. They're the ones you see a lot of times in the media.
And we don't understand them quite yet.
And don't understand, you know, everything about it.
So can we talk about that when we come back from break? I think that would be so interesting for us to understand the whole sex offendery from the criminal justice perspective. And
talk about whatever you want to talk about.
All right. Well, don't go away, Radio Rehab. We've got to take a break and let our sponsors have a minute. We'll be right back with Jamie Vogas. We're back talking to Jamie Vogas and Tina, and just hearing about the world and how to help people get better. So, Jamie, you were talking about the sex offender. How do you feel about the sex offender program philosophically? Do you like the word offender when referring to the folks you work with? Do you think that's a fair word to describe them, or is that just a criminal justice word?
It's just a criminal justice word. I mean,
the word offender.
Yeah, the word offender.
Sex offender.
There are so many levels, and what the public, you know, they hear sex offender and they automatically think
pedophile. Yeah.
There are so many levels, you know, whether it's someone that's on for a sexual battery, whether it's someone that's on for sexual misconduct, whether it's somebody that's on for rape, child molesting, you know, solicitation, child pornography. There's so many different levels. But
sexual misconduct?
Sexual misconduct.
What's that?
That is somebody having sexual relations that's over the age of 21 with someone under the age of 16 but over the age of 14.
Wow.
Actually, don't have to be 21, but...
So, 14 to 16-year-old, over 20.
Yeah, they have to be convicted of having sexual relations with between 14 and 16 before the age of consent. They can't be charged with child molesting if they're between that age. Those are usually sexual misconduct cases.
And they can get in trouble?
Well, absolutely.
All these 16-year-olds like these older guys.
Correct, but the law fixed a lot of... We had, at the beginning, there were some cases where 19-year-olds who were with 15-year-olds were getting put on the registry as sex offenders. Ooh. Well, the legislation fixed that. So the law says at least 4 years difference if the person, for example, the female or male is 15 and the child, the other person is 19, they do not have to be registered sex offenders.
But they can get busted for sexual misconduct?
But they can, no, well, they won't, but they can get... They can get charged, but they don't have to be sex offenders. They can get charged with something else.
Gotcha.
But if they're 20, 21, 20, you know, over the age of that, they can't be with a 14 or 15-year-old. So if there's no more than 4 years difference, they're trying to protect those young kids that have made those mistakes.
Yeah.
It doesn't protect the 50-year-old guy being with a teenage girl or anything like that. So. So there's different levels that people don't understand with that. And a lot of the things that I get with the guys that are on the registry is they get pigeonholed or they get labeled or they get whatever. And they may not – they have their own levels of themselves. They say, well, I may have done this, but at least I'm not that.
Their own denial.
They have their own
minimizations
of
their drug of choice, right?
Just like their drug of choice or their offense.
That's interesting.
You know?
So they'll justify, well, I'm not as bad as so-and-so.
Right. I may have been here for a sexual battery. At least I wasn't a child molester. Or, you know, I was on for child molesting, but at least my child wasn't under the age of – 5 or whatever it was, you know, so they all minimize or whatever.
Rationalize
so,
it.
Oh, sure.
That's addiction for sure. But
yeah, so
what's
it doesn't
sexual
matter
battery?
Sexual battery would be something to where you batter someone in a sexual manner, not necessarily rape, but you can touch them inappropriately. You can fondle somebody, another woman or something, your breasts. You can do that without having to have sex. You can get a sexual battery charge.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting here thinking there's so much of that goes on in the drinking and drugging world.
It correlates. I mean, it does correlate. A lot of times
when you're out at the bars,
when I talk to the guys about it and you know, I asked them, were you under the influence at the time? And a lot of times they were.
And so was she, probably.
And so, well, it depends on the age. I mean.
For sexual battery?
For any kind of offense.
I mean, can sexual battery be adult to adult?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
That's what I was thinking.
Absolutely.
In the bars, you see so much of that.
Yeah, you usually won't get sexual battery for a child victim. You'll get those other kind of cases.
And they're then convicted as sexual, they have to go on the offender list?
They have to go on the registry, yes.
And then does it tell on the registry what they're...
Yes.
Whether it's molestation or...
Yes. On the registry, they're required to have their name, their address, where they work, where they live, and what their charge is, and how long they're on the registry for. So that's, by law, what is required. So, you know, you'd ask me about, you know, the registry itself.
Yeah,
it's like
I've never seen it till you talked to me about it.
It's been around a while.
It's amazing.
before 1994, people didn't have to register.
Before 94.
Before 94. After that, with a lot of the laws that were changing, the Adam Walsh Act was one of the big things, you know.
That turned the tide.
That turned the tide and got a lot of the registry things going. Well, then, even only certain cases have to register. And then things kept progressing along the legislative level to the point where more and more people had to register, and for longer periods of time.
Yeah, so 10 years.
10 years, some, or lifetime. There's 10 or life in Indiana.
For fetishism, I think it's 10. They made this kid I was working with.
It depends on what his charge was. It goes by the offense.
If other people are involved or something.
Not necessarily. Just the charge itself will designate how long they have to. A lot of times the lifetime offenders are, if it's like a child molester, rapist, things like that, or the victim was under the age of 12 at the time, those guys are lifetime, or there's more than one sex offense in their history, they're lifetime.
So, God, Jamie. So your job is to look at these folks, see which, whether it was sexual misconduct, sexual battery, molestation, rape, and
we have to, we supervise the offenders according to, you know, what our standard is. They have their
accountability. So
they have their extra rules, probation order rules are probably 16, 17, 18 rules. And then when you have a sex offender, add 25 more. And that's how many more rules that they have to follow.
Do they?
Yeah.
Follow those rules?
For the most part,
a lot of rules.
Well, my sex offenders, for the most part, are the more compliant,
believe it or
not.
Even with the drink, can they drink and drug when they're on your?
No, they cannot.
Not even alcohol?
No, not usually, especially if they're in treatment, because that's a component of treatment.
And they follow the rules?
For the most part. For the most part.
Right, right.
Statistically, they seem to be better because they got a lot more riding on it sometimes to lose. A lot of these guys have already been to prison and coming out. So they know.
After you told me about that sex registry, I had to curiously get on the sheriff's department and look. And I'm like, oh, my God, I go to AA with one of these guys.
Well, there's over 400 some odd in Vandenberg County.
Goodness. And their pictures are on there. They're so exposed to the world. It's like
it's horrifying to them. Of course,
I'm sure.
You know, but the public has a right to know who they are and where they are.
Yeah.
One of the most difficult things that we have is residency issues, because the law limits to where these guys, if they're under supervision, where they can and cannot live too, and it makes it very, very difficult. That's one of the most challenging things with the offenders. Is
getting
making sure
home.
They're living where they can and cannot live.
So they have to tell a landlord.
Well, they have. They
sex
have
offender.
Well,
or they could look it up. I guess a landlord.
By law, they don't have to tell the landlord, but they have to register that address. And the landlords around are very keyed into this registry.
Oh, are they?
A lot of them are, and then they find. Oh, well, you're living here. You didn't tell me, which they don't have to by law tell them. But then they get booted out. So we've got a lot of homeless guys. A lot of the guys in the homeless shelters are probably, not a lot, but several are sex offenders because they got no place else to go. So, and the public doesn't care. I mean, not to say they don't care, but.
No, it's a subject. Yeah, it's
what they say is, you know, lock them up, you know, throw away the key.
Right.
But they're going to be out in the community, whether on probation or parole.
It reminds me of where drug addiction was 20 years ago, if you remember. It was like, lock them up, throw away the key.
Well,
there was
yeah.
no tolerance for drug addiction, especially.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And now it's sort of that same evolution with sex addiction and sex offendery.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I get it with the pedophiles and molesters. I can kind of see where people don't want them around, but a lot of the other stuff is so tied into sexual addiction and porno, and I don't know, how do you differentiate all that? I guess that's what you guys have to do.
Well, that's not my job to differentiate that. Like I told you before, I'm not the therapy side of it. I'm
right.
the supervision side.
Right.
So my job is to make sure that, because they are here in our community, and we want to make sure they're following through with everything.
Yeah.
And I'm responsible to know where they're at and what they're doing. The therapy side of it, we get them over to the therapy areas where they need to be.
And what happens if you don't agree? Well, wait, we'll come back after break and talk about that. Or let me just throw it at you. What happens if you don't agree with what the therapeutic recommendation is? Like, what if a therapist says they need to get locked up? They're going to act out again.
Well, the therapy doesn't have the authority to do that.
Oh,
okay.
They can make that recommendation.
They can make a recommendation.
If they're not safe right now.
If they're not safe or whatever, then we take it to the court. But, you know, if they're having issues, they're not compliant, they're not showing up, they're not doing things like that, that can get them sent back to
jail. What about
jail
if they
prison.
Drink or drug?
Well, that's a violation.
That could get them sent back,
that
too.
That can get them sent back, too. Mm-hmm.
Do most of them want to stay out of jail?
Yes. Most of
they
them do whatever back. That they will have to do, even if it's going to treatment, which they may feel they not don't need, but they'll mm-hmm. do it because they have to, because they don't want to go to jail.
Good God, you've got your hands full.
Well, we do. We do.
But I guess from a court perspective, you can't get attached. You can't get emotionally attached. You can't let yourself.
You can't help yourself sometimes with these people. You get, because you're seeing these people for, you know, 2 years, 18 months. I have a couple people that have 20 years of probation.
Good
that I'm supervising.
God.
I mean, that's a lifetime.
You're
I told
watch
them we're gonna retire together,
yeah.
basically. You know, so
how do you not have a relationship?
How you not have a relationship with these people?
Right.
And you have to.
Right.
You got to get to know their families, their kids. You know, we're out doing home visits ourselves. We're going to their houses. We're seeing how they live. I mean, you can't help but not get attached sometimes.
God, you should write a book. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We've got to let the sponsors take a minute. We'll be back with Jamie Vogas. We're still talking to J.B. Voges about such an interesting subject, and I think it's something we're going to be hearing a lot more about, sex offendery, sex addiction. And, you know, Jamie's just one of those awesome people that's able to balance firm and fair, and she knows how to be firm and she knows how to be fair, and these folks deserve a fair shot and a chance to get better. But of course she's trying to protect us and protect the law. And we were talking during the break, Jamie, just with Tina too, the stereotypes and how some people really are monsters and you don't want them around your kids and neighborhoods. Is that what you see, or is that what you sort out?
Absolutely. I mean, there are the guys that, and when they come to me, you know, we have to try to pick those guys out, because those guys I will put on even a higher level of supervision mm-hmm. than some of the other ones too, because I know that they have that history or anything like that. But like I've said before, you know, that they're in our community, they have to be supervised. You know, they have a right to work, they have a right to pay their bills, they have a right, you know, to take care of the families and stuff that they have. They have a huge difficulty in finding work, letting them come there
Because of the conviction.
Because of the conviction.
Yeah.
Whether it's a sex offense or not. I mean, we get it with burglaries, thefts, robberies, you know. Employers really are trying to block a lot of that stuff, and it is a huge barrier. That's probably why we have a lot of some more of the violations, or people that's going out committing new crimes again, because they can't find steady work. They can't find something to keep them busy because they're not working.
Right.
You know, so they're going out. They got too much time on their hands, so they're going out there in areas that they're comfortable with doing with their past behaviors and reoffending.
Mm.
So,
you know, and I guess for me, I can see a little bit of where employers would be concerned.
Well, yeah, because their information has to be put out there too. And when they, like the sex offenders, they have to register their employment and the employment's address. Well, then that employer, you know, they have to, you know, they're associated with that person.
Right.
And, you know, they're out, you know, taking care of things in the public too. And do they want to be seen as someone who is soft on sex offenders or letting them work for them? So, you know, it's
all
a tough job.
All the stigmatosis everywhere.
It is.
Yeah.
You know, so anytime, you know, I get guys that are working, sometimes I get employers calling me and I say, thank you for giving this guy a shot, you know, because they have a hard time. Understandably so.
Yes.
They've committed the crime. We understand that. They deserve to be punished. We understand that. But getting these guys going again and jumpstarting again.
Getting forgiveness from the community is rough.
Forgiveness is tough, yeah. Getting them forgiveness themselves, too, is tough.
Sure.
But just getting them moving again and trying to get them into direction. You know, probation is supposed to be, you know, not so much rehabilitation, but getting them going in a productive manner.
Right.
That's hard to do.
You're kind of the ones ushering them back into the community to get another shot and another chance.
Right. But they're getting blocked in every way. You know, there's a lot of guys that are placed on, they don't have the family support, they don't have the, you know, community support or anything. So
hold on, I think we've got a caller. Hi, welcome to Radio Rehab. Hello? Caller?
I don't think so.
Did that just turn red?
It did. I don't know.
Are you there? Anyway, do you differentiate between a molester and a rapist and some of the others? I mean, you just in your humanness, is that a just personally
not
a molester tougher sometimes to?
Well, I have to. I'm going to look at the cases. You know, I kind of look at, okay, so why is this guy here? You know, is this history there? And I have to. I mean, I guess to.
Yeah.
To put them under a little stricter supervision, closer monitoring, whatever we need to do.
I mean, do you feel like you judge them a little harsher, too, personally?
I try not to. It's not my place to judge.
Right, right.
I was just talking to a guy yesterday or the day, I think it was yesterday even. You know, the guys that they come in here, when they come in to see me, you know, we don't delve into a lot of their case and stuff a lot. And I told them, you know, this is not the place for that. Sometimes delving into to why you're here, we know why you're here. Mm-hmm. Dealing with that part of it is therapy side of it, and I let them deal into all the whys and the things on how to keep from doing that again. But when they're in seeing me, you know, we're under the supervision level and making sure they're moving forward and not backwards. So I try to focus on that. Because
do you
if
believe
I,
they can change? Because you
yes.
hear they can't change. You hear
I
once,
do.
You
I do.
Believe they can change.
I do.
I do too.
I do. If they really want to and they work hard towards it. But they're getting so many blockages and barriers that it's making it tough for
Sabotage
them.
Sabotage them almost.
Sometimes, yeah. But I believe that they can. And
do you believe everybody that looks at porno could end up being a sex offender?
Yes, I do.
That every
not pornography. Well, you know, you got to differentiate between that and child pornography.
Oh, okay. Yeah. What's the difference?
Pornography. Anybody
over 18.
Yeah. Anybody can look at pornography, go to the strip clubs, go, you know, look at the magazines, things like that. That's pornography.
And a lot of people do that.
A lot of people do that. And there's nothing wrong with that part of it. You know, a lot of people have sexual relations with lots of other people. There's nothing wrong with that. The line gets drawn when it's children involved, okay? And those people that act out, in my opinion,
with
you know,
children.
With the children, they have the child pornography, you know, they're probably...
One drink away from a...
Yeah, they're probably apt to be more inclined to do that at some point if they haven't. Now, there's different people that don't do that. That's all that they like is to look at the child pornography, and they don't act on that. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. But there's a lot of people that take that next step.
So, and I think we as a community don't understand a lot of... that kind of person, and we just want to, like you said, just pigeonhole everybody.
Pigeonhole,
well, if this happened to you
up.
Once, then you're, you're going to hurt my kid, or you're going to hurt my neighbor.
Yeah.
There's this attitude that goes with sex offendery. They don't even differentiate like you
I've
do.
Had many of the, some, not many, but a lot of times the guys, you know, they're doing what they're supposed to. They're going to their treatment. They found work. They're doing something, but they're getting backlash from the community. Their neighbors are trashing their house. They're getting their cars egged. Mm. They're getting their stuff, you know, painted over, you know, with bad things on it. And they're saying to me, I thought I'm not supposed to be harassed.
Right.
Because the law does say that you're not allowed to harass these people. But what happens to them, you know, they report it to the police. The police say, well, you know, what can we do?
So you've got a tough job. It's almost like you have to protect us and also protect them.
Well, we have to not so much protect them, but make sure to make them accountable.
Right, right. And make sure they get a chance to change.
Yeah.
And somebody's got to kind of give them a chance, I guess.
Yeah. And that's where the difficulty comes, because...
Have you heard the term sexual addiction?
Oh, yeah.
Now,
absolutely.
I heard it's not going to be in the DSM-5 like it was the DSM-4, our new diagnostic Bible. Mm-hmm. There's going to be other sexual compulsive behaviors in there, but not the sexual addiction model. Do you agree that it can become an obsessive compulsive behavior,
absolutely.
This porno stuff?
Absolutely. It is a obsessive compulsive behavior. And that's why they keep going and keep going and keep going.
Keep going
I believe
back.
It is.
Just like a drug.
That's where a lot of the offenses come in. When they get caught, a lot of times it's not their first time. Mm. It's just the first time they've gotten caught.
Yeah, like DUIs.
Like DUIs.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the first time they've drunk and drive.
No.
It's the first time they've gotten caught.
I think the research, MAD, says that most drunk drivers, their first offense, they've gotten away with it 100 times before their first. They 100 drunk
A lot of the
times.
Trainings I've been to a lot of times before that they talk about when they go get into really into the treatment part of it, and they talk to these guys about victims and how many victims, you know, they don't have one victim. Sometimes they have 30,
right.
40. I mean, it just depends on
when they got caught.
Yeah.
Yeah. Judge Meyer used to ask at drug court, how many criminal offenses did you commit a day before you got busted? In a day? Some of them 10 a day.
Well, yeah, I'm not surprised, like, with alcohol and drugs and things
yeah.
like that. Absolutely.
Yeah. And 80% of your folks, you think, have substance use issues, too.
I think. Guys that come in, people that come in from jail, first thing when they get brought in on their initial charges, I probably would say 70, 80% of those have to do something with alcohol or drug related.
So they've got to stay clean and sober.
Whether they're stealing, you know, to try to keep their drug addictions mm-hmm. going, you know, trying to get things from Walgreens, you know, they're trying to, burglaries, thefts, robberies, whatever. A lot of them are alcohol and drug related.
Yeah.
Jeez. And meth has just exploded in our area.
Yeah. Do you think it's getting any better, Jimmy,
no.
in the 20 years? Yeah,
I do not.
I don't either.
I tell a lot of my guys,
either.
There's a war
yeah.
that's going on out there,
we're
and we're losing.
There. Yeah, we're losing
we're still
the
fighting.
War on drugs. You're right.
We're
you
still fighting,
right.
but we're losing.
Yep.
You know, so.
Yeah. Better programs, better people, but it's still the human dilemma, isn't it?
We throw so much money into programming and trying to get these people going. But unless these frontline guys are doing their part and paying it forward to the next person, you know, we're still behind the eight ball.
Right, right. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We're talking to Jamie Vogas about sex offender, sex addiction, and just all of her interesting, fascinating stories in the past 20 plus years of working with folks that have addictive disorders. We will be right back. Well, we're back wrapping it up with Jamie and her sister Tina. Thanks, Tina, for coming. I know you didn't want to say anything, but I've appreciated your input too, and in your field too. It's frustrating to see people not want to get better. That's probably, Jamie, the most frustrating thing for us, isn't it?
I've told people before, if you would work as hard at being clean as I would want you to,
yes,
that you want. Judge Trockman has said to many people all the time, "We're not going to work harder than you."
You know, yeah, but we do sometimes.
But we do sometimes.
At first.
Yeah. And I've said to him before, if you cared as much about staying clean as your judge does or your probation officer does, you know, we would be ahead of the game. But
yeah.
I don't. You know, it is, it's a gamble. They're thinking, okay, well, I did a drug screen once. You know, next time I go in, you know, they're counting the days in their head when they can use again or whatever.
Right.
And then, are they going to test me? You know, it's a good likelihood they may not, whatever. It's
trying to get away with it.
But statistically, we're going to catch you. And I said, we may not catch you this time, but we're going to get you.
For sure. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So with sex offendery, it sounds like you see more, at least, optimistic results with people that are compliant, trying to change, wanting to change. They don't want to be in this sexual nightmare.
They do
nightmare.
Not want to be in, yeah. They get sucked into the nightmare.
Yeah.
And their lives have been, you know, turned upside down. And it doesn't just follow them while they're on supervision. Yeah. It's going to follow them whether they're on a 10-year registry or lifetime. So they have to deal with that part of it. And once they get past that part of finally when they realize, okay, I'm here, this is what I'm doing, they get used to it. It will always be something that they're going to have to be fighting against, whether it's with the public, employers, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So they go to prison. Is it true they're abused in prison? Sex offenders?
Not as much from what I understand anymore, because the Department of Corrections has earmarked a couple of the facilities now to strictly be for sex offenders because of the programming issues and stuff that they do. They're mandated to do programming in the facility. Mm. So they used to do them in all the different facilities, but now they've kind of geared them towards, they're all in the same facilities. A couple of the facilities around the state monitored the sex offenders. So,
hold on, don't go away.
Okay.
Are you there? Hi, welcome to Radio Rehab.
This is Marvelline.
Marvelline, the other show host. You know Marvelline Prince?
No,
Jamie?
I do not.
Right.
Nothing
right.
Bad. Good.
Tonda.
Oh yes, Tonda. Yes. Sweet person. Well, it depends upon what they actually get charged with and convicted with. So if their conviction results in one of the offenses that is required by law, yes, he will go on the registry if it's a standard legislative reason. Now, if there's not more than 4 years now between the age of the victim, he should not be a registered sex offender. And they will put his plea agreement or his sentencing in accordance so that he wouldn't have to be on the registry. So I don't know what he would get charged
with. You mean 18 and 15, Marvelline?
Usually, yeah.
So if it's 18 and 15, it's not within the 4 year.
It's within the 4, so he shouldn't have to be a registered offender.
Sex offender.
It depends on how they charge it and how they plead it, but yeah.
Have they done that yet, Marvelline?
I don't know. I guess lost her. Yeah.
So an 18-year-old and a 15-year-old doesn't constitute sex offender list.
Shouldn't constitute a sex offender list. It depends, again, how they do
that. Is there a lot of that? Parents of 18-19-year-old or 15-year-olds going after 18-19-year-olds, 20-year-olds?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see that part of it as much.
Right.
Because they, I don't know if they work it through, how they work that part of it through. But, you know, I have a guy that he was 19 and she was 14 or something, and he's on the registry.
A 19-year-old and a 14-year-old,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, 5 years and
mm-hmm.
sexual battery case, so.
Right, I think Marvelline's. Are you back there, Marvelline?
It's not flashing, so, okay.
You there? We lost you, sorry about that.
Well, it definitely could cause problems, yeah.
What, Marvelline? What?
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's a great question. Yeah, look Jamie up over there in that big bad jail. She says there's not enough room at the inn for the real offenders.
They're full.
Huh?
I thought you were downtown.
I am downtown. I am downtown.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Lisa got confused.
Marvelline, but Jamie was saying what you always say, you know, the jails are so full of people that aren't really criminals that the real criminals can't even get into jail.
Yeah, there is. Oh, absolutely. And they're just still there because they can't afford bond. You know, so they're riding their time out until they get their case disposed. You know, the courts are, every day, the courts are trying to move cases as quick as they can, but to try to get these guys out. So, yeah.
The entry of females, is it rising?
Females in the system? Yes, it is, actually. We've been finding that lately. Didn't used to be. It used to be the ratio probably was 4 to 1, or but it's going up. We're seeing a lot more female offenders now.
Girls are getting mean, Marvelline.
Yeah. Drugs, alcohol, whatever it is. But, yeah, we're getting seen a lot more. Oh, absolutely.
Yep. Yep. Well, thank you for calling in. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye. Will you come back? We have to keep having this discussion so the community understands more about this whole sexual offendery. There are brothers and sisters. There are neighbors. There, you know, we got to understand as a community, I think, and the role that substance abuse plays in it, too.
Well, yeah, yeah.
So, Jamie, we've just got a couple minutes left. We were just saying we're losing the war. Do you have any, just in your own head, ideas of what we could do better?
If I did, I would.
We'd be millionaires.
We'd be millionaires. Yeah. I don't know. We keep fighting. We keep plugging away at it. We keep working at it. Yeah. Like I said, these guys, they have to want it more than us. So.
Yes.
We're trying on our end. I tell a lot of people there's only so much that we can do. You know, there's a lot of money that's being thrown into this through the courts and things like that. So I don't know the answer, but I keep fighting. So.
If somebody out there that's listening has a family member or friend they're concerned about in that area, are there any people, you or anybody, they could call to get some suggestions and advice so that it doesn't get worse?
As far as
sexual acting out,
well, they can seek their local therapies.
Go into the therapy departments.
That's where they need to seek those out. You know, probation is after the fact.
Right.
We get the people after it happens, they're sentenced, and then they're being supervised.
Right.
So we don't get to pick who we
you
get.
You can't do prevention in that
We don't
area.
Do the prevention part
you
of it.
You prevent relapse.
We try.
Yeah.
But yeah, we don't get to pick who we get. You know, they get sentenced to us, and then we supervise them from there. So if it's trying to be preventative, seek your mental health providers. That's what they need to do.
Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you
for fighting the good fight.
I hope I didn't sound too ridiculous.
You were awesome.
Yeah.
We need to hear more and more. Thank you. And Radio Tina, thanks for coming and giving her support, too.
You're welcome.
Oh, my God. Did she just talk?
She just talked.
Physical therapy. We could talk about drunk driving all day on her end, too. Anyway, we will be back. We'll have Jamie and Tina hopefully back at another time. Thank you for tuning in. Have a great weekend. And between now and next Saturday, don't forget to do the next right thing.